Welcome to Sport Faith Life with Brian Bolt and Chad Carlson, two guys who came together for one common purpose, to think deeply about sport and faith. They are sports scholars, they're coaches, and they're competitive athletes, or at least they were. And together, they've created Sport Faith Life, a conversation that meets at the intersection of sport and faith.
Today on Sport Faith Life, we welcome Charlotte Smith. Charlotte is the head women's basketball coach at Elon University, but she became instantly famous way back in 1994 when she made the game-winning three-point shot at the buzzer for the North Carolina Tar Heels to win the NCAA National Championship. After college, Charlotte played professional basketball in Italy for 11 years and then with the WNBA. She is the author of two books, When Coaches Pray and When Athletes Pray. She's also a terrific singer and songwriter. We're delighted to meet and talk with Charlotte today. So let's get started.
We are delighted to have Charlotte Smith with us today. Charlotte, tell us a little bit about sport in your life.
Well, sports has always been a part of my life. It is my life. I grew up in a basketball family. My legendary Uncle David Thompson. I grew up watching Michael Jordan, wanting to idolize and be like Mike, but grew up having a lot of basketball competitions in my grandmother's backyard, my mom's mom. That's David, the David Thompson side of the family. So I always had a great love for basketball, a love for sports, a love for competition, whether or not it was basketball, you know, whether it was who could tie their shoe the fastest, who could wall sit the longest. These are the type of competitions that my Uncle David had us in as little kids. And so I always grew up with a great love for competition, which made me a very good athlete and good in sports.
Guy, if I could ever think of like a place and time that I would want to go back to like observe basketball, it'd probably be like North Carolina in the late 1970s or early 1980s, just like you said. That's fantastic. Tell us a little bit about faith in your life.
Well, faith has always been a part of my life as well. I grew up a PK. My dad was a pastor. My dad's mother was a minister. So church has always been our foundation. My faith has always been my foundation. And I'm just so grateful for my upbringing because it has been instilled in me where it gives me the guidance and the leadership that I need today to be who I am. My love for God started out with just my parents forcing us to go to church every Sunday to the point to where now I long and I hunger to be in the house of the Lord. I know what David meant when he said, I was glad when they said unto me, let us come into the house of the Lord.
Well, that's so very well said, Charlotte, and I can't wait to get into a little bit more about both faith and sport in your life. But let's start by just learning something more about you. Is there something that you could say or describe that helps our listeners get to know you?
Yeah. Well, when growing up as a little girl, my Uncle David gave me an encyclopedia. And one of my favorite books in that collection was this book called Make and Do, where you could like create and make stuff. So I've always been a creative. So I love designing. I love the Cricut machine where you can design like all of these different designs and shirts. I love music. I love to write music. I love to create music. I can hear sound in my head and kind of recreate those sounds. So I'm very passionate about music, jingles. I love to create jingles. So just in the creative space, that's me.
Well, Sport Faith Life could use a jingle, Chad, don't you think? We could, just employ her right here.
Yeah, I can work on that for you.
There we go. I think that'd be perfect. We'd love that.
Yeah. I love to cook as well. Love to cook as well. And so when the pandemic hit, I did a cooking show like on Facebook where I would come and cook, and I had a little jingle called Chef Char's Kitchen.
Okay.
Chef Char's Kitchen.
I don't know if you're going to do this, but come on. We need to hear the little jingle.
All right. It's Welcome to Chef Char's Kitchen. What your taste buds been missing? Welcome to Chef Char's Kitchen. What your taste buds been missing? Welcome to Chef Char's Kitchen. Yeah.
That's perfect. Ah, oh, I love it. I love it.
I can't wait till she does our Sport Faith Life one. That's amazing. And you need to perform it as well. That's a beautiful voice. That's awesome.
Thank you.
So it sounds like your uncle was a big influence in your life. And to have a famous uncle kind of makes you famous in some ways, or at least locally, right? It you know, people know that that's your famous uncle. But you became famous yourself. And I have to confess, I am a North Carolina grad. Mm-hmm. So I went down to North Carolina in 1991, started paying attention, you know, in much greater level to basketball. And I would follow both men's and women's basketball. And I don't know if I know any other women's basketball as well as I would know North Carolina. And I don't know if there's one moment that I would remember in my life more than the one moment that involved freshman Charlotte Smith, which was just an amazing moment. Just give us a sense. I know you've had to do this a million times. Talk us through that moment.
Wow. Well, it's a culmination of a lot of hard work. You know, you put in the years of trying to, I wouldn't say resurrect the program. Well, I guess I could say resurrect the program because they had won a championship in the 80s. And so just looking at the culmination of 3 years of hard work and realizing here we are in Richmond, Virginia at the Final Four, and we have an opportunity to win a national championship. And that was back when the games were back to back. So it was very difficult, you know, to play in the semis and then you're in the championship game back to back. But it was very rewarding. And it was very frustrating at the same time because I felt like in that game, we could never really pull away. It was just like we would score, they would score. And so there was just no room to like take a deep breath and exhale and relax. And so we find ourselves with like 0.7 seconds left on the clock and we're down. And I remember thinking like, wow, what could you possibly do in 0.7 seconds? I thought it was over for us. And unbeknownst to myself, it would go on to be one of the greatest shots in women's basketball history, where we're going for the win and not the tie. I mean, that's a bold move right there, going for the win and not the tie. So Coach Hatchell draws up the play in the huddle and the rest is history and we become national champions.
I got to jump in here, Chad. I'm sorry.
I got to jump Brian's starstruck here. I know. I get it.
Yeah, I have a little starstruck. Yeah. I thought the same thing. So I'm a budding coach at that time and I'm thinking, okay, what am I going to do? I have a few seconds here to draw up something. And, you know, the announcers are talking about 0.7 seconds, maybe throwing a lob into your tallest player and getting some sort of tip. And I went back and looked at that play over and over again to figure out how they got you so open. And it was just very cleverly done. No one expected it. I don't know. Coach Hatchell did just an amazing job. But really, the guts to be able to call in that moment a three is what I most respected. I mean, the idea that we're going to go for the win. And to be honest, the three-point shot had not been around all that long. I mean, it at that point, colleges had gone to it. It had been 7-8 years or so. But it was an amazing call. And then just magical execution. So a very exciting moment. Sorry, Chad, I just had to, you know, reminisce a little.
Yeah, it was a very gutsy call. Very gutsy. And, you know, I had the pleasure of sitting with Coach Hatchell in the airport, almost 30 years later, because I wanted to know, like, what were you thinking in that moment? And she said, you know, it was divine inspiration. It had to be because I wasn't the best three-point shooter on the team. Like, who would make a call like that? Wasn't the best three-point shooter on the team, was not the go-to player on the team. And Tanya Sampson, who was our go-to player, our leading scorer, everybody anticipated since the lob to our 6'5 player, Sylvia Crawley, didn't work, that Tanya Sampson would be the obvious option. So there was miscommunication. Three players went with Tanya Sampson, and I find myself backpedaling all by myself. And we were just talking about this the other day with Coach Andrew Calder. One of the mistakes that they made was it was taking a long time to get to the play. And the coach decided to take someone off the ball So that created more of a clear path to be able to make that. I mean, it had to be a precision pass. That was a very difficult pass.
Well, you know, Brian, are you done with your line of questioning about this?
I could pick up again, but I'll let you participate this time, Chad. Go ahead.
So, Charlotte, here's my question, right? This is a defining moment, not the defining moment. Yeah, I mean, you have a number of moments throughout your career, right? You've had a great career, and it feels to me a little bit like you have a musician or a musical group who has a number of hits, but there's just one that people want to hear above all the others. And so everywhere you go, everyone wants to hear that one song amidst your entire repertoire. What's it like to have sort of that within your repertoire of experiences, right? You've had all these great experiences as a player and a coach, and yet that's the one thing that people always want to talk about. Like, what is it like to have that sort of thing and to almost have that on repeat, right? People want to talk about that moment.
Right. It's very empowering. It's a very powerful moment. You know, when you think about not just the shot, but the story and the culmination of it all. You know, because a lot of people, they see the tip of the iceberg, but they don't see what's underneath. A lot, because when they think of the shot, they think of like this young lady that had ice water in her veins. And so when they bring up the shot and when there's time, I always get the pleasure of being able to tell the true story. Because when you think about the magnitude of that moment, oftentimes a lot of people experience fear. And what I will tell them is that, no, I didn't have ice water in my veins. No, I was sorely afraid. It was a huge moment. The magnitude of the moment was so great that I absolutely forgot the entire play walking out on the floor. Fortunately, one of my teammates was right there beside me. Fortunately, I was humble enough to swallow my pride and say, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't remember the play. Hello, refresh my memory. You know, I had the honor of being able to speak back in my hometown in Shelby, North Carolina at Cleveland Community College. And one of the things I shared was about, you know, in life, sometimes it will present us with fear and having the courage to do it afraid. You know, how can I have that testimony had I not had that experience?
Yeah. And what a wonderful lesson to be able to draw on over and over again and make that connection. All of us in sport and in other parts of life can get gripped with fear, gripped with anxiety. And yet in the moment, you found a way to walk through it. It took a little help from your teammate just to get to that cognitive place. And then just to be able to release the shot without the tension that a lot of people would have. Often that shot is short, right? It's just your muscles get tight. You can't get it there. And you got that shot in, and you didn't have time to think about it, really. That ball came to you and you had to let it fly. And what a great experience. I wonder, as you think about that lesson and that moment, it's a lot to follow up on. Yeah. Tell us, is there a way that somehow opened doors for you that sort of put you on a trajectory that you might even trace back to that moment?
Most definitely. I mean, when you have Stuart Scott, rest in peace, come into your campus to interview you, to have a one-on-one dunking contest with you, George mm-hmm. Michael, Sports Machine, I'm taking you way back.
Yeah.
Robin Roberts, you know, came to campus to interview me. So this was back before social media was huge. I mean, I'm just trying to imagine the magnitude of that moment. If we take it and we place it 30 years later, the impact that it would have had. So to have that type of impact 30 years ago, it's pretty significant.
You've talked a little bit, especially recently, Charlotte, about the ways in which, you know, basketball has taken over your life at times and taken over your identity. And that's pulled a little bit away from, you know, who you are as a Christian or a person of faith. And I wonder if you can talk a little bit about that, too. We've talked about this moment and how it's opened doors for you. Has there been any negative side effects of that sort of thing?
There's always negative side effects when you tie it to your identity. And when you reach levels of success, you oftentimes try to recreate that at the expense of losing who you are. And I think a lot of that had to do with like the WNBA. When I got to the WNBA, that's the best of the best, the best of the best. And so I wanted to recreate all of that success that I had experienced at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And every year I found myself being frustrated because I wasn't a WNBA All-Star. We didn't win the championship. And it was like my prayer list was created this thing where God became the genie in a bottle. And I wanted you to answer my WNBA wish list, and frustrated and feeling like I was just a complete disappointment. And I remember just praying and the feeling like the Holy Spirit was saying, well, what have you done for me lately? And just redirecting my thoughts about my greater purpose and using my platform to not build my kingdom. Don't build Charlotte's kingdom, build God's kingdom.
Yeah, that's so well said. And a temptation that all athletes have without a doubt, right? To start connecting that success to sort of favor with God. And God has favor for you, but it may not materialize in the way that we anticipate or expect or want, which is really interesting. I wondered, so our listeners wouldn't know, like, where have you gone from there? It's 30 years from the moment that that happened. Can you just, I know that's not fair, but give us sort of that next trajectory, that next 30 years. How has sport continued on in your life? And give us a sense of the different roles you've taken.
Right. Well, I played internationally after leaving UNC, played in the American Basketball League, and then I played in the WNBA. My professional career, it was the beginning and the end of that career was eye-opening, you know, because I lost my mom at the beginning of my professional career in 96, and then I lost my dad at the end of my professional career in 2006. And I felt like a lot of my hopes and my dreams, aspirations went into the grave with them, because my whole point in life as a little girl was, you know, I grew up on a dead end street. We grew up in poverty, and my whole goal was to get my family out of poverty. You know, I remember when I played in the ABL, when I first moved into my townhouse in Denver, Colorado, my family packed up the cars and helped me move there. And I remember my mom, when she first walked around and looked around, she said, wow, I like new stuff. And so it was my heart's desire to buy her a new house. It was my heart's desire to do a lot of things. So in that span of 10 years, I lost a lot. I lost a lot of hope. And I lost some tangible things, you know, my mom and my dad. But the good thing is in fighting through those 10 years, I lost my faith in God, but then I regained my faith in God, and realizing that life is full of hills and valleys, and that even when we walk away from God and even when we forsake him, he remains faithful, and he just sits there and waits on the sidelines for us to realize how much we really need him and how important he is in our lives. And so just even in through like all the hardships, through all the pain, through all the disappointment, God has been faithful to sustain me, and his grace has always been sufficient. And so it's just been 30 years of growing and being molded into the woman that I am today, to be able to shine a light on who God is through the disappointments, through the hurt, through the joys, through the pains, through the ups and the downs. He remains consistent and he remains faithful.
So there's a couple of interesting bookends there that you talked about with your professional playing career and also some of the ups and downs. And I can assume that some of those had to do with performance, and some of those had to do with wins and losses, and others had to do with, you know, losing oneself, so to speak, right? That just happens to adults at times. I'm curious how this changed as you've gotten into coaching. In what ways has coaching as a profession helped you to continue to grow in your faith, and also maybe offered times when there's been setbacks or low points?
All right. Well, I think the biggest thing that you have to understand is your why, your purpose for what you're doing. You know, when we look at the life of Jesus, he said, I must be about my Father's business. He knew the mission. He knew his purpose. And so I knew going into coaching that my purpose was to develop young women for a lifetime of success. And that was through sharing my journey, because I believe that your transparency can be the key to somebody else's victory. So it's not just about sharing my successes. Yes, they probably look at my life and say, wow, she played at the highest level. Wow, she hit the game-winning shot. But it's so much bigger than that. And that's what I have to keep in the forefront, that it's bigger than basketball. These are young women that I'm molding to be great people, to go out and make an impact in their families, to make an impact in their communities. So while you're pursuing the prize of winning a championship, you have to pursue the greater purpose even harder.
So you've been coaching now for a while. You know, you're a veteran coach at this point. And you're at the collegiate level, where the landscape has changed pretty substantially over the last few years, right? We have a transfer portal. We have NIL. You know, things are different maybe than when you first started coaching. I wonder if you could reflect on that a little bit and talk about the challenges that you, and maybe possibilities, when you think about the goals that you've already set out for yourself for impacting the lives of young women.
Right. Well, I think Gino RM has summed it up best when he's talked about how things are so transactional now versus relational. And the change in landscape, I always give this example. We do what we call vision boards every year. And it's about, you know, your goals, short-term, long-term, things you want to accomplish in life. And I can recall when we did these at the beginning, the early stages of my career, how a lot of the players would talk about the impact that they wanted to make in the lives of others. And then if you keep fast forwarding, it becomes more inward about what I can accumulate, what I can accomplish for myself personally. And I'm not one to judge, because when I look back over my life, you know, and when I think back to when the Holy Spirit said, well, what have you done for me? I was very inward as well. But when you think of how the change in the landscape of how our society has changed, it has forced people to become more inward. And that's where we have to, as leaders, this is the one thing that Coach Hatcha was really good at. And I think back to one of her quotes that I remember to this day, when you become wrapped up in yourself, you become a very small package. And so my job as a leader is to get them to unwrap themselves from self, to step out of this selfie generation, to understand the power of your platform and the difference that you can make in the lives of others only when you open your eyes up to see that which is around you versus constantly focusing on what's in your inwardness and what you can accomplish for yourself.
What are the kinds of community that help you be a Christian coach right now in the women, in the world of women's basketball, in the world of collegiate basketball in North Carolina? What's the community that you have that can help support you in what you do?
Fellowship of Christian Athletes is a powerful organization that we have on the campus of Elon. When I first arrived at Elon, we did not have FCA. And I'm thinking, like, how in the world do student athletes make it without FCA? Because I knew how critical that was for me as a student athlete. So we pushed and we pushed and we finally got some movement where we got FCA reestablished on the campus of Elon University. And not only do we have a huddle for student athletes, but we have a coaches huddle as well. And that's what feeds me every single Tuesday at 7 a.m. We have our FCA coaches huddle. I'm also involved in this program called Nation of Coaches. And Kelly Kennedy is one of my mentors that calls in weekly to do check-ins to see how I'm doing. So you have to have something that grounds you, something that supports you, like Aaron and Hur was holding up the arms of Moses, you know, when they were in battle. So I'm just grateful for my circle and my network. And then I also have three of my college teammates that I talk to every single day on this platform called Marco Polo. It's these videos that you can do every day. So every day they're Marco Poloing. We're encouraging each other. You know, today is Friday. So we say today is Fantastic Friday. And we're giving Bible verses and scriptures to encourage and equip each other for whatever it is that we face every day.
Yeah, I've become a fan of Marco Polo as well. I found that it's been useful on a team just to loosen them up a little bit. Sometimes jumping on a video and just leaving it there is a great way to encourage one another, help each other out. So that's I'm sure Marco Polo's happy we're advertising for them. Maybe they could, you know, send us a buck or two.
I need an NIL deal.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we're talking. All right. I like that. So you've talked a little bit about your how your Christian faith has been both challenged and developed in the process of coaching. How have you developed? Let's get down to the sport. What's happening in the sport, or how have you developed as a coach that that may be a little bit different than when you first started?
Right. I think the biggest area of growth that I've seen in myself is just the grace to deal with losses. You know, when you come from a program, you know, in my career over a 4-year span as a player, I lost 23 games. That's not a whole lot of games in 4 years. You know, as a pro, I was used to winning. You know, there was one season where in the WNBA where we did have a very difficult season where we started out 1-10. And that's when I played for the Charlotte Sting under Coach Ann Donovan, rest in peace. And we changed the trajectory of that team from 1-10 to winning the Eastern Conference Championship and making it all the way to the WNBA Finals. So it's like when you encounter seasons like that, you're hoping in the back of your mind that you can recreate those moments. But for the last couple of years, you know, we've had losing seasons, 9-21. You know, I'm not used to that. So we had, you know, we had a losing season. And then this, according to the world standards, and I say that again, according to the world standards, we had a losing season again. But I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world. You know, after we went 9-21 2 years ago, I was like, Lord, I remember losing so many games and just walking in downtown Wilmington and just saying, Lord, I can't take this anymore. Like, you have to help us win this game. Like, cause I can't take another loss. And as I was walking, I vividly remember looking up at the street sign and the name of the street, lo and behold, was Grace. And I could hear Holy Spirit saying, my grace is sufficient. And we lost that game. Just when I thought I couldn't lose any more games, he helped me to realize that his grace was sufficient. And after going 9-21, you're thinking this next season, okay, things are going to turn around. We were down 3 starters this past season. Now we won 2 more games than we did last year. We were 11 and whatever we were, but it was still a losing season. But where I grew was, is I had more grace than I ever thought. And I tried to be very intentional of showing up every day with a positive attitude and not holding it against them and not being angry, because I dealt with so many emotions that first year, but just a little bit more grace to be a little more compassionate and patient and understanding. So the Lord has been stretching me in these what the world calls losing seasons, but I consider them to be learning seasons, because you learn so much more about yourself and the losses than you ever could have learned in the wins. Now, I will say, hopefully, that we don't have to go through another losing season, because I'm looking at like myself first. And that's the one thing that we have to realize, because too often my coach used to say, we can point the finger, but there's always 3 of them pointing back at us. So I'm always evaluating myself first to see what it is I need to do in terms of being a better human being first, and then a better coach second.
Yeah, there's probably something that's really important about seeing a losing season as a learning season, mm-hmm. right? And it hits close to home for us as academics, because we always talk about being lifelong learners. Well, if you're a lifelong learner and a learning season is a losing season, that means you're a lifelong loser. and nobody wants to be that, right? But we certainly want to be able to benefit from, and we're not going to get out of these sort of losing cycles or losing skids if we're not learning from those anyways, right? And so I'm curious how you go around and talk to people, right, as the head coach, and you're glad handing, and you're speaking with your athletic directors, and you're speaking with potential recruits' families and all of that. Like, what's the messaging to them right now about the state of the program and you, knowing that you're such a positive person with such a breadth of experiences, specifically those that include a lot of winning, and now here we are, right, and you're learning a lot through all of this, and you're learning to lose with grace, and you're learning about grace. What's the messaging?
Well, the message is transparency. I start with that, you know, because everybody wants everything to be painted so beautifully in peaches and cream. But no, let's talk about the hard stuff, you know, because most people want to talk about the tip of the iceberg, all the success. And I tell people all the time that you have not led until you've led through a storm. And I'm so grateful for those storms. I'm grateful for those hard times, because how can I be all things to all men if I've not been through a storm?
Yeah. And as a fellow coach, I coach a different sport, but everything that you've said has certainly resonated, particularly, you know, the hard parts of turning that in on yourself, trying desperately to prove yourself as a coach, and realizing in the midst of that how small you're getting. I think I'll borrow your line, or Sylvia's line, about a small package. That makes a lot of sense to me. As you turn in on yourself, your impact just goes down. And I think as coaches, we are so hard on ourselves, right? We're very hard on ourselves as we think about it. And there is something about sport that just repeated losing is a really hard thing to get through. And yet, I think the Christian message there has something to offer, and is something very different than what the world has to offer. The world's going to say that's a losing season. The world's going to say that coach has lost it. And yet, it may be that God is leading you and them through a storm, and that's an entirely different thing. So I really appreciate the way that you framed that. And I think it's a great message, not only for the student athletes, but for coaches that are struggling. You know, I just had a good friend who just resigned from his role, and, you know, ultimately it just came down to, I just can't lose anymore. And it's unfortunate, because they're really, really good people that impact kids. And so, you know, we want to find a way to encourage them as we go. Charlotte, I wonder, as we close this up, is there something that, looking ahead, you know, you're still a relatively young coach going forward. Looking ahead, if you could say to young coaches, this is a good direction to go, or this is my advice to you, how would you frame that?
Yeah, well, I have an incredible story to share with you, because the losing it's gone on for probably about 3 years in a row. And I remember 3 years ago, maybe 3 or 4 years ago, praying, just, God, I need to win a game. Like, we've lost so much. And, you know, for myself personally, I could probably deal with another loss, but it was impacting the team and it was impacting their morale. And I was just wanting that win for them. It was the very final home game of the season. It's senior day, and you're wanting it for everybody. And I remember before I came out to the floor, sitting and writing in my journal and just asking God to just please allow us to get this win. And when I went to sit down on the bench, the mother of our ball kid came up to me and she said, I want you to know that Wesley has been watching your life, and he wants you to lead him to Christ after the game. Now, I hadn't been out, I don't, on the corner holding up a street sign saying, mm-hmm. give your life to Jesus and I'm a Christian. You know, you just go about your day. And a lot of times the Bible that most people will read is our lives. The light that they'll see is our life. And so I remember sitting through that game and we got to the end and we didn't win the game. But as I was thinking in my mind throughout the whole game, the greatest victory that we're ever going to have is at the end of this game when I get to lead this young man to Christ. And right there on our bench, courtside, I sat there and I prayed with him. And I have that picture on my desk to remind me of my greater purpose and the impact, the influence that we can have on the lives of others when we don't get wrapped up in ourselves and become the small package, when we don't become so discouraged because of the losses, and we start to look for the lessons in the losses, because I'm not only looking for it for myself, but I'm encouraging my players as well. Because when you're going through losses, God is showing you your heart. And sometimes when we get in these hard places, we realize that we need to be like David, where it says, create in me a clean heart and renew a right spirit in me. Because sometimes those hard places will reveal the character of your spirit. And sometimes it's not in the right place. And really, at the end of the day, that's what it is about, is us going from glory to glory and becoming more and more in the image of Christ. And so in order for us to become molded into the image, sometimes we have to go through the fire. And it's like what that silversmith says, you know, how do I know that, how do you know when it's ready to come out of the fire? And he says, when I see my image in it. And so sometimes God will allow us to go through that fire, and he's not going to pull us out until he sees more of his image in us. And if we truly want to be like Christ, we can't just embrace the good and not embrace the hard.
Well, Charlotte, you are the niece of a superstar NBA player, but you're more the son of a, or daughter of a preacher. And for that, that's what I'm going to remember. And, I'm going to also look forward to having you on the show again, if you will, because that I think that's an inspirational message for everyone. And so thank you so much for taking the time to do that. I need to leave you to go work on our jingle. That's going to be important. That's, you know, that's going to propel us to the next level, I'm sure.
The jingle will definitely propel you to the next
Clearly.
Level. And
Clearly.
I was going to say, before we close out, I just want to encourage coaches. You know, I talk about transparency. I wrote a book called When Coaches Pray for Coaches, and I talk about my experiences in that book. And I also wrote a book for athletes called When Athletes Pray. And so my website is www.whenathletespray.org, and you can get those resources from that website to help you as well.
Yes, and that is fantastic. Thanks so much, Charlotte Smith, for spending some time with us here on Sport, Faith, Life. God bless you.
Thank you, and God bless you as well.
Thanks for tuning in to the Sport, Faith, Life podcast, a conversation at the intersection of sport and faith. Read the corresponding blog post and learn more about us at sportfaithlife.com. Listen to more of our podcasts on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, and follow us on social media to stay up to date with everything Sport, Faith, Life. We'll be right back.